All right, welcome back to Third String Podcast. We have a quick playoff update for you today. I'm joined by Pete LeCleed, as always, and Ishan Knapp. Ishan, this time, is fresh back from India. That's why he hasn't been with us for the last couple of weeks. So, Ishan, 30 seconds. How was India?
It was great. Got to see my family, got to do a little traveling, see the mountains up in the northern part, which is where my dad grew up. So, yeah, it was a great trip. Thanks.
Well, I'm glad you're back, and glad you did not catch any nearly fatal diseases this time, because I know you've had a run-in with those in the past in India. So glad you're back and healthy and with us, and here to talk basketball. I want to dive in real quick to NBA stuff, and before we talk individual stuff about the series, I want to just acknowledge and extend our sympathies to the Popovich family. Just a couple of days ago, news broke that Erin Popovich, the wife of Greg Popovich, passed away at the age of 67 due to an illness that she'd been battling for an extended period of time, I think for a couple of decades even. So Greg Popovich, obviously and understandably, has taken a leave of absence from the team. He did not coach them in their most recent game against the Warriors. So he is at home with his family, and we just wanted to extend our deepest sympathies and condolences to the Popovich family in what must be a very difficult time, and is very sad. And Popovich is one of the all-time greats, certainly going to be a Hall of Famer, maybe the greatest coach ever, certainly in the conversation for that. So for him to go through this in such a challenging time is tough to watch, and we feel for the whole Popovich clan. So with that said, I do want to talk about some of these playoff matchups that we've seen so far, and maybe we can start with the game that just finished up a couple of minutes ago, Raptors-Wizards. So the series now evened at 2-2 with the Wizards over the Raptors 98. Guys, what has jumped out at you in this series? Ishan, we'll start with you.
So I, before the series, thought the Raptors would win in about five games, which is obviously not possible anymore. I fell asleep due to a bit of jet lag during this most recent game, but it looked like at the end of the game, the Raptors were sort of falling back into their old habits of Lowry, DeRozan, ISOs, and being really reliant on those two guys and not having their, you know, Spurs, Warriors-like, pass the ball around the perimeter and get open looks at threes. And so that was always kind of a danger. The Raptors really, you know, they didn't change their roster that much that season, but they shot up to the top of the NBA by changing the way they played. And so falling back into the bad old habits on offense is kind of a problem. And looking at the stats, they only attempted 18 three-pointers in this game, whereas earlier games in the series, they've been making almost 18 three-pointers. And so that's a bit of a concern for the Raptors. And then also, you know, they just have so many playoff ghosts of underachieving in series the last few years that now that they're under pressure in game five, I think there's a lot of reason to be nervous, which is a bummer for me because I've been really enjoying the Raptors' run and rooting for them.
Yeah, I agree. This has already gone longer than I thought it would. I mean, I thought it was possible the Raptors would sweep the Wizards, but I thought more like a five game, sort of a 4-1 at the when it was all said and done. Obviously, that's not going to happen because the Wizards have already napped too. So, Pete, I know you're a Wizards fan. As a true Washington Sun, what are your thoughts on this series?
So, I didn't think the Wizards would get swept. I thought they would get one, but I will be honest, I certainly didn't think that they would get two, especially with those first two games that they played in Toronto, where I think that this is it almost feels more like a 4-5 series right now, or a 3-6 matchup versus a 1-8 based on the scores of the first four games. But the scores were not really indicative of how those first two games were played specifically. These games 3 and 4 in Washington, what has really surprised me about the Raptors have been the defensive breakdowns on the part of the Raptors, as well as just how many turnovers they've had every game. I'll tell you, watching that game tonight, Bradley Beal fouling out with about 4 minutes left on a kind of bizarre call, in my opinion. Obviously, I'm rooting for the Wizards in that one, but where Bradley Beal is basically standing still and somehow gets called for that foul and he fouls out with 4 minutes left, and the Wizards still put forward a gritty performance. It really, really surprised me. John Wall, who, yes, he is the leader of that team, but he takes it on the chin from the Washington faithful as well as the national media pretty often, and I have been pleasantly surprised with how much he's stepping up. So it's been a fun watch as a Washington fan. I don't really know what the next three games have in store, to be honest, but it's been fun so far.
I can report, I was asleep when that call happened. I woke up shortly after, but I can report that NBA Twitter thought it was a terrible call.
All right, I'll take that.
All right, well, let's move on to the Celtics-Bucks matchup now.
Wait,
this
can
one
we do
also
predictions? Can we do predictions?
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, so rest of the series, we're at 2-2. What's going to happen next?
I think the Raptors win the next two and take it at six.
I think it's going to seven. I still like the Raptors in seven, but I think it's going to seven.
All right, so moving on, Celtics-Bucks. This is also tied 2-2 after the Celtics opened up a 2-0 lead. So I didn't expect this to happen. I thought after the Celtics started 2-0, I thought they would win in five, maybe six. But now it looks like it could go even longer than that. So what do you guys think? What's jumped out at you so far?
Pete, I'll let you go first.
So what has surprised me about this series, honestly, it centers around Giannis more than anything else. And I know that that's a cop-out answer. But it seems like the Bucks are just living and dying with Giannis. And what's surprising is over the last two games, the Celtics just haven't had an answer for him. That I think Marcus Smart could be interesting here over the next couple games. I think he got cleared for game six. I think he could make it a more interesting series. But it seems that if Giannis keeps clicking like he has, I mean, he had that clutch tip in game four to win that game for the Bucks. If they figure out a way to shut down Giannis, I think the Celtics will be fine. I don't know if they have that answer right now.
So I'm going to make a couple kind of random comments about this series. I think in terms of who I think is going to win, I had the Bucks in six before the series. I think I'm going to stick with that.
Okay.
But I think the things that have jumped out at me here is just the Celtics have no business winning a playoff series without Kyrie and Hayward with this roster they're trotting out, led by, you know, 20 and 21 year olds and Tatum and Jaylen Brown. So whatever happens in this series, whatever, you know, if they win a series, if they don't win a series, they're not going that deep in the playoffs this year without their stars. But this is so huge for their futures of franchise. I mean, Jaylen Brown today, 34 points, 5 3-pointers. He's like hitting clutch, cold-blooded step-back fadeaways in the fourth quarter of a tight playoff game. And, you know, next season, he's going to be their fifth-best starter when their guys are all back. And so this experience that Brown and Tatum are getting, I think, is like the most important thing to come out of the series in terms of the Celtics morphing into a real title contender over the next year or two. So that's the main thing that jumped out at me. But then the other thing that's really jumped out at me about this series is this hilarious little Eric Bledsoe slub plot where he basically got completely tooled by Terry Rozier in games one and two with Rozier with that, you know, behind the back, step back, should have been the game winner three, except then Chris Middleton tied it with that half court shot in game one, and then the blowout loss in game two. And then the reporters asked him some question about how they're going to get a handle on Rozier after game two. And he was like, who the F is Terry Rozier? Yeah. I was just like, how do you trash talk like that when you're getting completely dominated by the guy? Now they've won two in a row. And so this Bledsoe Rozier, and also Rozier, as far as I can tell, doesn't say any words. He's like a Kawhi, Tony Snell kind of quiet guy.
Yeah, super quiet.
And so it's like so bizarre. Like, of all the people to choose to trash talk to the media, Eric Bledsoe's going after Terry Rozier after getting dominated by him. So I was just really entertained by that. It's really the main thing that has jumped out at me about this series. I don't really have anything else intelligent to say about.
Yeah, I think that's one of my favorite subplots of the NBA playoffs. Another one is Drake calling Kelly Oubre Jr. a bum on the sideline of the game.
You got to admit something really, really interesting and kind of inspiring about the Bucks has been they called themselves out for a lack of physicality for those first two games in Boston. And these last two games, it has been a different Bucks team on defense against the Celtics. And agree with all your points, Ishan, but you got to admit the way that the Bucks are just imposing their will on the Celtics has the way that it changed between games two and three is something unlike I've seen in any other playoff series so far.
It seems like you've watched these games more closely than I have.
Well, what are you guys' predictions for the rest of the series here now that it's tied 2-2?
I think the Bucks win the next two.
Yeah, I don't think the Celtics win another game.
Wow, okay. You heard it here.
I'm mostly sticking with that because I had Bucks in six before the series and I want to be correct.
You know, I'd be curious to know, I'll have to look this up. I wonder if any team has ever won four straight after being down in a 0-2 hole in the playoffs, because that's what the Bucks would have.
It's definitely happened a few times. Okay. It happened in the 0-6 finals for one thing, the Heat Mavericks. That's just the first one that pops into my head.
Okay. All right. So
I just want to be on Freezing Cold Takes. That's the only reason I said it. I just want to show up on that Twitter feed finally.
Let's go to the 3-seed, 6-seed matchup, Sixers Heat. This is one that I've been watching pretty closely. What do you guys think about this one? The Sixers now up 3-1. They're 1-1 away from advancing in the playoffs 2 years after a 10-win season. So that's quite a turnaround. Trust the process, all of that. I could say more, but I'll defer to you. Ishan, we'll start with you.
I have not been able to watch a lot of this series. You know, I just kind of find, I think, conditional on Embiid being healthy, I never really thought the Sixers had a, or the Heat had a chance. I think I thought the Sixers would win in about five. Maybe it would go seven if Embiid had, you know, a slow return, but fortunately he's back and healthy. I just find the Heat to be an oddly boring team just because they're sort of, they're capped out, and they're capped out with a bunch of like overpaid role players, and not, it's like really hard for me to see the young, exciting talent there. You know, maybe you could squint and see something in like Bam or Justice Winslow or something, but I don't really want to watch Dwayne Wade play basketball anymore. I'm still residually annoyed from his awful effort in Chicago. And, you know, so I just kind of expected the Sixers to cruise and have been mostly not watching the series because the Heat kind of bore me. So that's my super mature take on that series.
Yeah, fair enough. They've been mostly cruising. I mean, they obviously have the one loss, but there also have been some chippy moments, including yesterday in the game, an almost skirmish, James Johnson, Ben Simmons, Robert Covington getting into it. So, Pete, what do you think, though?
Hey, Zach,
Sixers Heat.
I gotta ask you, my friend. You said they're cruising, 27 turnovers, and they still found a way to win that game. Is this just a team of destiny, or are the Heat just that bad, and they just can't run with the Sixers over four quarters anymore? I mean, let's be honest. There's no way in a playoff series you should win with 27 turnovers.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I don't even know what to make of it. It's a lot of fun to watch, but at times it borders on just ridiculous basketball.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's a lot to that. And when you watch the Sixers team, what jumps out at you, or at least when I watch the Sixers team, what jumps out at me is the incredibly high ceiling that these guys have. Like when you watch Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons be the best versions of themselves, you're watching two guys who could in their own right be league MVPs someday. But on the other hand, you're watching two guys who don't have much playing experience at all. And this is alongside teammates like Dario Saric and Robert Covington, guys who are all really young and don't have much playing experience. So I think you're going to see a lot of mental mistakes, a lot of inexperience just in terms of knowing when to make what shots. And that's going to come across in, you know, giving up 27 turnovers like you saw yesterday. But even so, they have that next gear that they can engage when they need to. And so when they opened up and they had the 20 turnovers, I think, in the first quarter yesterday, they were able to really step it up after that and obviously kind of drive the dagger home in Miami. So, go ahead.
Do you think this is going to get better as the playoffs go on and these young guys kind of start settling in? Or do you think that the moment is going to be too big for them as they... I think we're all pretty much in agreement right now that they're getting to round two, but... This stage only gets bigger in the finals and the NBA playoffs overall. Do you think this could be their undoing, or do you think this is something they're going to find a way to work through?
No, I think they'll work through it all the way through the Eastern Conference. I actually think at this point that the Sixers are going to go to the finals, and there they'll get crushed by either the Rockets or the Warriors. So there's definitely a ceiling to how far they'll go. But I do think that the Eastern Conference finals is not a stage too big for these guys.
Freezing cold takes. They're listening.
I think a couple other things worth noting here is that the due to the Kyrie and Hayward injuries, the Sixers' path to the conference finals is like paper soft. Like
yeah,
it's arguably
exactly.
The Heat and Bucks are not even really playoff teams. They're just kind of in the playoffs because there have to be eight teams from the Eastern Conference in the playoffs. And then, the Cavs, Raptors, I think, and even the Wizards and Pacers are probably more talented than anyone in the four-team bracket the Sixers are in. So I think the conference finals is like I feel very good about them getting to the conference finals. I still think the Raptors are going to win the East, but the Sixers are going far. Oh, the other thing I was going to say is on these turnovers, I think one thing worth noting is like it's really creates really weird spacing when you have like a 6'11" non-shooting point guard. The way teams sag really far off Simmons, and then he sort of tries to squeeze some passes into tight windows. So, like, obviously Simmons is a great player already, and there's a lot of pluses to having him. But I think You know, they just haven't played that many games together as a team to figure out these strange spacing issues with all these seven-footers running around and some of the shooters being the big men. And the court just looks a little different when the Sixers are playing. And so I think there's going to be some weird turnover stuff going on until they've played with it for a few years.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. Well, speaking of Cavs-Pacers, should we talk about that one? What do you guys think about this matchup so far? The Cavs in a hole, finding themselves down 2-1. And they're playing as we speak. We're going to try to hurry up and finish this so we can get off and watch that. But what do you guys think is going to happen here?
Now, are the Cavs in the hole 2-1, or is LeBron in the hole 2-1? Because the rest of the Cavs haven't shown up for this series whatsoever. It is LeBron versus the world. I mean, have we ever seen a team leave a star hanging like they're leaving LeBron right now? It's almost embarrassing to watch for how great of a player he is and how much he just doesn't have any help anymore.
I am going to completely disagree with that narrative a little bit. I think that a lot of the ways... Well, so first of all, I think if you just took LeBron and Oladipo off the two rosters and matched them up, I think it's like hard to see why you would take the Pacers as a better roster past their star than the Cavs. I mean, certainly Kevin Love is the best player remaining on the two teams. And then, like, I don't know, these role players, Hood, Thompson, Korver, Smith, are they really that much worse than the, you know, Collison, Turner, Bogdanovich, Youngs of the world? I don't know. I would probably take the Cavs roster over the Pacers roster. Players 2 through N. Do you disagree with that?
No, I agree with you on taking the roster, but the lack of performance from any of that roster right now in the playoffs is really what kind of, I don't want to say worries me. I mean, I have no stake in the Cavs, but just games, honestly, in any of these games, who has been notable on that Cavs roster besides LeBron at this point? Just feels like the Pacers are getting onesie-twosie guys stepping up, and there is no one helping LeBron right now.
Yeah, I mean, I see some of that. I think also the degree of responsibility LeBron takes here should go a little bit beyond the box score stats, where he's obviously, at least in game two, he put up some good box score stats. I think in game one, he's like 7 for 17 from the field. I don't remember game three how he looked. But the little things here, I think, are starting to add up. LeBron not getting back on defense, not rotating on defense, the body language towards his teammates when they miss a shot. Let's see, he's 10 for 22 from the field, but he did have 28 points and 12 rebounds and 8 assists in game 3. So, you know, like, the box score stats are there, but I think when you're watching the games, there's a lot of little things LeBron is not doing that I think are contributing as much as his teammates. And on the other hand, Oladipo, as I say this, just sprinted back and got a block to break up a fast break. So I think Oladipo's intangibles and hustle and the way he's responding to the performance of his teammates is having an impact here in a really different way than the off-box score impact of LeBron.
So what are your guys' predictions for the rest of the series?
I had Cavs in 6 before the series. I think maybe I still think the Cavs win in 7. I mean, the Pacers just don't have a lot of talent after Oladipo. And, you know, as well as Oladipo's played this season, like, he's still not as good as LeBron. And so I think in the end, this isn't the series for the Cavs to fall.
Yeah, I took the Cavs in 6 as well. And I agree with you, man. I got the Cavs in 7 at this point. I just don't think you can bet against LeBron, especially in the first round. But if you're a Cleveland fan here, you got to be really, really nervous. I mean, obviously, you live in that realm 99% of the year in sports anyway with what's going on in Cleveland these days. But, man, there's just – I don't even want to say it's a lack of hustle or a lack of effort, because obviously I'm not these guys, so I don't know what they're doing. But you watch these press conferences, and LeBron is just so frustrated during these press conferences, and Lou just has nothing good to say whatsoever. And it just seems like I don't want to say Cleveland has already given up on the series, because I think they're still going to come out and compete and win. But there is something mentally in that locker room that is just not good right now.
Yeah, and for that reason, I'm going to disagree with both of you guys. I'm going to call the Pacers here. And I know it's not the popular pick, but I'll say Pacers in 7. I think Bogdanovich is starting to show some signs of life. He had a great game last night, put up 30 points. I think LeBron, I mean, last night he played 42 minutes and could only put up 28 points. I know, I mean, 28 points is a Herculean effort for a normal person, But for LeBron, if it's going to be him versus the Pacers, he's going to need to do more than that. And like you were saying, Pete, I think there are some fundamental things wrong with this team. I'm not sure if they want to go much further than this. And for that reason, I think they'll just sort of fade out. And it'll be a slow fade. I think they'll be able to win a couple more, but I think it'll go to 7 games and the Pacers will take it.
And then LeBron to Philly, right?
That's right. Yep. and then they're gonna trade to get Kawhi as well.
Oh man.
I should say I'm totally not confident in the Cavs winning the series. I think it could definitely go either way. I think a lot of crazy stuff happened in that game too. I mean, first of all, it was a home game. Second of all, I thought the Cavs got an incredibly favorable whistle. Third of all, Oladipo's foul trouble completely dominated that game. He only played 26 minutes due to the fouls he picked up, and I thought really bad decisions by Nate McMillan to sit him the whole first quarter and much of the second quarter. And by the time he got back in, the deficit was pretty big. And, you know, they still finished plus 11 in Oladipo's minutes in game two, which is their only loss. And for the series, they're plus 31 with Oladipo on the court. And so, yeah, I think absolutely possible they win. I think whoever wins this game that we're watching right now, which the Cavs are up by a couple early, is going to win the series.
All right, well, let's move over to the Western Conference, and I want to hurry up and finish basketball discussion. I know, Pete, you want to mention a few things about hockey. Real quick, do you guys have anything on the Rockets-Timberwolves series? The Rockets now up 2-1 after Jimmy Butler and company squeaked out a win yesterday. Do you guys think this has any implications, or will the Rockets go on and win this in 5?
I think the story here is not really about the Rockets at all. It's like only, I think whatever happens in the series is reflective of the fact that they were talking about an 8 seed that won 47 games, probably would have won 51, 52 games if Jimmy didn't miss a third of the season. And, they were one win away from being the 3 seed. And so the Rockets, if this takes them 6 or 7 games to win this series, I don't think that means anything about whether or not they're a serious contender or even the favorite to win the West and win the title. I think it's really good from the Timberwolves perspective, even with a recovering Jimmy, that they managed to get even one win against a really dominant Rockets team that was 46-3 when Paul Harden and Capella all played. And so I think anything from here on out from the Timberwolves perspective is just gravy for this season. As for prediction, I think the Rockets probably win the next 2.
Yeah, I agree with that. What do you think, Pete?
Timberwolves have surprised me, but not in a way that makes me change my prediction on the series, right? I think that the Rockets will be just fine. I had the Rockets in 5. I could easily see it going to 6, just because the Timberwolves have been a surprisingly fun team to watch, but overall, Rockets will be just fine.
Okay, let's go Thunder-Jazz. Pete, I know you were calling the Jazz ahead of the 4-seeded Thunder before the playoffs started. Have you seen anything to make you question that? I know the Jazz right now up 2-1, so you're happy with your prediction, like you said before?
I am happy with the prediction. I'm not as confident as I was. I mean, you guys know I watch a lot of West Coast games with all the time I spend on the West Coast. This series has been hard for me to figure out any trends during whatsoever, so I'm going to stick with it. I'm excited for more good basketball, but I'm pleasantly surprised that my pick is still holding up.
Yeah, I had Jazz in 6. I'm sticking with that. The Thunder have a lot of talent, but haven't inspired a lot of confidence all season. The Jazz were, 28-5 in their last 33 games? So they're a pretty weird 5 seed. One note on this series is Ricky Rubio suddenly discovering how to shoot 3-pointers. He's had a few stretches in his career where he hit 3s, but I think this is probably the longest stretch ever where he's consistently made 3-pointers over the last 2 months or so. I think it's like a really underrated development for this postseason. Like, he's not good at shooting, and all of a sudden he's like knocking down 3s. And I think that makes the Jazz a real threat to even, push the Rockets in the next round.
Yeah, I think you're right. So real quick, the only round that is over or the only series that is over is the Pelicans, who swept the Blazers in 4 games. Was this surprising to you guys?
So I picked the Pelicans to win that series in 6 games for the reason that I thought it was just a perfect matchup for them. Because what the Pelicans have is like a long line of some of the best guard, small guard defenders in the NBA. And Drew Holiday and Etuan Moore, I think, in my opinion, are two of the few best guys in the league at guarding point guard scorer types like Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. And then Rondo, you know, sometimes is a little lazy on defense in the regular season, but in the playoffs tends to turn it up. So they have basically three guys who are really locked down defenders at the point guard position. And what they really lack is long rangy wings. So anybody like a Durant, Paul George, Kawhi is just death on the Pelicans. But of course, they got a first round matchup against the team that gets most of their scoring and offense from two guys who are 6'1 and 6'3. So I thought this was just a terrible matchup for Portland, and I thought New Orleans would win. But that being said, the Pelicans morphing into this juggernaut, and you know, this wasn't about matchups. This was them just throttling the Blazers and just turning into a really great team, clicking on all cylinders. They had a 10-game winning streak after Cousins went down late in the season. Anthony Davis has just turned into, you know, he's probably the best player in the NBA at this exact moment. 47 points in the clincher. Drew Holiday right now is playing like a top five player. So, and then, you know, Mirotić just killing it with the threes. He's always had super underrated defense and it's probably at its all-time peak. And then Etuan and Rondo and these other guys off the bench have played really well as role players. The Pelicans are a real problem right now. I think they could beat the Warriors if Steph's not, certainly if Steph isn't back at all, but even if Steph doesn't get back to some sort of reasonable impact soon, the Pelicans have turned themselves into a real threat.
Well, let's talk about that, actually. We'll segue into our final series, which is Warriors-Spurs. The Warriors up 3-1 on the Spurs. It, just from my vantage point, it doesn't really look like the Warriors have looked challenged at any point in this series. Obviously, they lost the one game, but they knew they could afford to do that. And it has not been evident at any point that the Spurs have posed a challenge. I think the Warriors will go on to win this series easily. Do you really think that they can, that the Pelicans can threaten them in round two?
Not if Steph is even 85% back. But I think if Steph misses like the first three or four games of round two, I'm not really sure what his updated prognosis is. But yeah, I think the Warriors are very reliant on defense right now without Steph. They're starting Andre Iguodala at the point guard position. So they have like all this length and switchability all across the floor with Iguodala, Draymond, Clay, Durant, just length everywhere. But, oddly for the Warriors, they play a lot of lineups that lack shooting right now. They just don't have that many trustworthy wings because Nick Young is just not a guy you can trust in the playoffs. And, you know, Quinn Cook's played well, but he's a guy who wasn't on a full NBA contract until the last week of the season. And so they're playing a lot of lineups right now with like one shooter out there with, you know, Livingston, Iguodala, and two centers, basically. And the way the Pelicans have been playing defense, I could see them just suffocating lineups like that. But on the other hand, the Pelicans kind of are, Kevin Durant is, like I mentioned earlier, the exact problem for what the Pelicans have. They just don't have a single guy on their entire roster who can guard big wings. And so Durant might just make that not matter at all. And also, yeah, Steph gets back, I don't think it matters.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. Well, do you guys have any more thoughts on NBA? I know, Pete, you have a few words you want to say about another subject.
Yeah, you guys want to talk about the great old hockey game here for 2 to 3 minutes real quick?
Yeah.
So I know that hockey, especially during the NBA playoffs and the early series, does not get a whole lot of attention, where my complaint with hockey is, unlike basketball, that is normally a clean two and a half hour game. Hockey games are almost 3 hours, 7 games. You see a lot of overtime. They don't go to the shootout as early as they normally do in the regular season. So the games tend to kind of drag on and on and on if you're not emotionally invested in a specific team. But watching the first round of the playoffs this year in the NHL, and we still have 3 series going on right now, it has been a great playoffs so far. So obviously we here on Third String are big fans of the Vegas Golden Knights, who not only won their first playoff series in franchise history, but won it in very astounding fashion sweeping the Los Angeles Kings in 4 games. So they've been a lot of fun. Marc-Andre Fleury, who was a backup, has been a fantastic goalie so far, especially if you're on the West Coast and you can catch those 10 o'clock puck drop times. Check out the Vegas Golden Knights as much as you can, because they are just a fun team to watch. in the East, we are seeing almost every game go to overtime, which when you first look at it, I know it's a drag, but when you look at things like the Maple Leafs Bruins series, where you're seeing comebacks of say the Maple Leafs are down 4-1, come back, make it a game. You're seeing fantastic playoff series from top to bottom. Obviously, you guys know I'm a diehard Capitals fan. The Caps lost their first two games of the series in overtime on home ice. The first team to ever lose the first two games of a playoff series at home in overtime. So talk about a team who's down and out on their luck, came back to win the next two games in Columbus, won the fifth game in overtime. I'm just seeing exciting hockey like I cannot remember. And granted, I'm emotionally invested in a team. But if you guys are clicking through over the next couple of nights, maybe the NBA is taking a break that night or not as compelling as it normally is, check out a hockey game on NBC or NBC SN, especially as we get into the second round. I think we're going to see some fantastic playoff hockey going down the stretch. And finally, as much as I dislike him as a Washington Capitals fan, I think Sidney Crosby is quickly cementing what was already a pretty convincing case to be easily one of the top three hockey players of all time. And in my opinion, the best Penguin of all time, even surpassing the great Mario Lemieux. So it's tough for me to watch Sidney Crosby. Obviously, I'm an Alexander Ovechkin fan, and those guys are arch rivals.
Right.
But if you appreciate the sport, it's a lot of fun. Zach, did you see what happened today between the Flyers and the Penguins? I know you're not a big hockey guy, but
the hat trick on an MCL tear?
So we had that, but the way that the series ended today was the Penguins scored 8, the Flyers scored 5, so you're looking at 13 goals, which is pretty ridiculous in hockey, but resulted in not only beer cans being thrown at the ice, but full beer cans. So regardless of what you're into, whether it's good hockey, whether it's fighting, whether it's fans getting involved, you're getting it in the hockey playoffs this year. And Sidney Crosby, when asked about those full beers being thrown at them, said, well, you can't throw them as far if they're empty, can you?
That's true, yeah. Philadelphia, man. What a city for sports. Also, Pete, I wanted to extend my condolences to you as a Caps fan, because I know Burakovsky's out for the rest of the first round, and he's a crucial guy for you, so hopefully he'll be back for the second.
He sure is. It's been a crazy playoffs, really, regardless of the series you're watching, except for the Vegas series. Every team has had to make some epic change to their lineup, where we're seeing not only line changes, but you're seeing goalie changes. I mean, think about everything a goalie does for you. That's like changing out your quarterback at halftime of the national championship when you're Alabama, right? I mean, these are big things that you're asking these guys to come in cold and try to turn the tide of a game. So it's a lot of fun to watch. Really, regardless of the team you're rooting for right now.
All right. Well, thank you so much to everyone for joining us on this episode of Third String Podcast. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Zach Crippen. Pete is at Pete LeCleed, and Ishan is at Ishan_Nath. You can also check us out on medium.com/thirdstring. We have lots of great written content there. And until next time, thanks for listening to Third String Podcast.